Hey, you're tuned into the Pennsylvania Rock Show, featuring the best unsigned rock that Pennsylvania has to offer right here on PARockShow.com, MegaRockRadio.net. With me tonight is Ron Marks. What's up, Ron?
How you doing, man? Glad to be here.
Not too bad. I'm going to start out with something that I noticed when I was doing my research, and it's probably not a normal thing that I would ask, but
all right.
You wrote a book?
Yes, absolutely.
And
it's called Blood Groove, and it's pretty much a story of my life as a professional musician.
And is that available? Like, can people find
it? It's completed, and we're looking for a publisher.
Cool.
So yeah, that's definitely on the list. It's a pretty long list of things we're trying to accomplish, and the book was just completed a few months ago.
And for those people that don't know, you were a member of Celtic Frost.
Yeah, that's right. I was there, did a couple tours with Frost, and also co-wrote and recorded an album called Vanity Nemesis.
And that's a heavy metal band from Switzerland, correct?
Yeah, from Zurich, Switzerland. A lot of times people say Sweden and Germany and everything else, but it's actually Switzerland.
Well, I'm cheating. I'm looking at your bio.
Cool.
See, I told you it was raw.
That's great, man.
So, give me... If I were to ask you who your biggest influence was as a musician, and you could only pick one, maybe two, who would you put at the top of that list?
I'm going to say Frank Zappa and Kiss, which I understand is maybe a strange combination, but if I'm honest, that's the truth.
Normally, when I bring up Kiss in an interview, I get smacked down by the person I'm interviewing.
No. I guess I got my first Kiss album when I was about 12, and prior to that, I had listened to jazz almost exclusively. My family's very musical, and my dad was a great jazz artist, and so he was turning me on at a young age to Oscar Peterson, Buddy Rich, a lot of big band stuff, Bill Evans, etc. And I loved it, and I still love it, but I got a hold of my first Kiss album, and I went, oh, rock and roll, this is pretty cool too. So yeah, Kiss was definitely pivotal, and then some years later a friend turned me on to Zappa, and I've been quite a fanatic of Zappa's ever since.
Well, you started out as a drummer, correct?
Yeah, I started playing drums 4 or 5 years old and loved it, and played my grandfather's concert band and played in school and a few small local bands. But then I wanted to write songs. I wanted to be a composer, not just a musician. And that was kind of hard to do on drums. So that's where the guitar came in.
Well, that's a similarity with Peter Criss, right?
He played, I believe so, yeah.
Played big band, and and he didn't really have a rock background until he met the guys from Kiss.
Right. Yeah, he was a big, good jazz fan as well.
I'm going to take a moment here and promote myself. So on November 7th, I have the Pennsylvania Rock Show anniversary. You may have seen the flyer online.
Right, yeah, I did.
And every year I try and get a band to play Kiss covers.
Oh, wow.
And I've never succeeded until this year.
Oh.
The heaviest band is playing is going to play two covers. They're called the Hellfire Club.
Oh, cool.
And they are going to play Strutter in Detroit Rock City for me.
I've been playing those songs for 25 years in bands. I actually do a pretty mean Paul Stanley.
What's your favorite Kiss song?
Oh, geez, that's impossible. There's dozens of them. I mean, yeah, to pick one would be kind of a slam to the rest of them, I guess. But I'm a biggest fan of the first six albums. I wasn't big on the 80s stuff and all that.
My favorite album is Destroyer.
Yeah, I mean, how can you beat it? I mean, it was pivotal for them. You know, they went from a four-piece band to Destroyer has strings and keyboards and all this, you know, production, and it was great. You know, I give them credit. They really took a chance with that because it did not match the previous albums at all. And, good for them. It worked.
Have you ever, we'll stick with Kiss as a theme here for a moment.
Okay.
Have you ever done a concept album?
No. No. I was never a fan of those. When I write a record, I mean, of course there's a continuity to it. My band Subsonic is certainly a hard rock band. That was a conscious decision. But I write and record a lot of songs, and then some stay and some leave. That's pretty much how. I hope that each album has a bit of its own identity. I don't want to make the same album every time. But to sit down and go, okay, it's all going to be about this concept or that concept, I find that too limiting. And it sounds like you're forcing it, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to write a song about this. I don't know what the song's about until it falls out of my head. And I like to keep options open that way.
So here's where I was headed with that question.
Okay.
My opinion, the worst Kiss album I ever heard was Music from the Elder, which, you know, they wrote for a film that never happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not one of their best ones, and they had quite a few dogs during that period. And, you know, geez, and then you stick with them, and then they come out with Revenge, and you're like, this is great. It's a Kiss record. They're back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it. Then they go right back to, you know, I don't get Psycho Circus. I don't get any of the other stuff.
I went to the Psycho Circus tour.
Did you?
And they played two songs off of it.
Right, right. and listening to the album, I mean, it's pretty obvious. They were going for this, like, airplay stuff. And I don't know whose idea that was. I'm guessing it was Simmons. But, you know, it's just not that kind of band, and it never was. And it was like he was always going for that. We have to become a commercial hit. It's like, you're already legendary. Who cares? Mm-hmm. You know, just do what you do.
What about Carnival of Souls?
I heard that too. And they're going for the detune thing because they think that was modern rock. Just be Kiss. You don't have to chase anybody. You don't have to follow what's going on. You know, you should be setting the trend, not following it. So, yeah, they just never came back. I don't know what the problem was. Hey, they've done it to us many times. I mean, you know, all that Hot in the Shade stuff. And, I mean, I
actually didn't mind that one.
It's okay, but, you know, where's the grit? Where's the angst? Where's the power? It's just, I don't know.
That's actually how I got my wife hooked, was Forever off of Hot in the Shade.
Oh, really? Well, hey, you know, they found different audiences with different albums. You know, I'm sure maybe people who liked Hot in the Shade wouldn't like Dress to Kill or Destroyer or something. Maybe it was too heavy or too... So, you know, everybody has their thing.
Sticking with the Kiss theme, since it's working so well, we're learning about you and about Kiss.
Okay.
Are there any bands that you've seen when you went to see Kiss that you were surprised by?
You mean openers? Oh, boy, I've seen them so many times. I can't remember everybody that opened. One that was fun was I saw on the Dynasty tour, and Wendy O. Williams and the Plasmatics opened. That was pretty cool. I don't know how many people around still know them, but it was raw and it was outrageous, but that was the fun of it. Since then, oh, God, I've seen so many bands open for them. No, nobody really stuck out. I was there to see Kiss.
I am. Took my wife a couple years ago. We went to see Motley Crue,
mm-hmm.
and I can't remember who else was with them. And she said to me, "I wouldn't see this band again if they were with Kiss."
Oh, really?
Oh, she did not like them.
You mean the Crue or the opener?
She did not like Motley Crue.
Wow.
She likes Kiss. Did not like Motley Crue.
Huh. Well, there you go. You can never tell what, you know, what's going to reach people.
So Subsonic started that in 2000?
Yes, that's right.
And who's in that band with you?
Well, I am the band pretty much. I write all the songs. I record all the instruments. I engineer it. I produce it. And when we go play live, I have a live band's actually based in Pittsburgh. The bassist is Peter Goulard, and the drummer is Sean Melvin. And we've done some shows in Indianapolis. We've done two shows in Chicago, and we did one in Pittsburgh at the Smiling Moose.
I've never been to the Smiling Moose. But I heard that it's a pain to get your equipment in there.
Yeah, the steps are unbelievable. I mean, I don't know that we'll be back there. It's just, it's a lot of work.
So, speaking of that, I'm sure you're familiar with the 31st Street Pub in Pittsburgh.
Sure.
Did you know that it recently closed?
Oh, no, I did not know that. That's a shame.
That was my almost my exact words.
Yeah, no kidding. There aren't that many venues around to do that, so to lose any of them is pretty bad.
Yeah, that one, it was more of the punk scene, but it was such a cool place.
Sure. At least it was original music.
And I was trying to remember who I saw there. It was, are you familiar with the Emergenza festivals?
No, I don't know that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to not say my opinion of them, but it's basically a big band contest.
Okay.
And they give out prizes. But I was there, three bands from here in the Ali-Kiski Valley were in the finals.
I see.
And I went to support them. And it didn't quite go our way, but it was cool. You know, are you from Pittsburgh originally?
No, I'm originally from Hermitage, PA, which is about 85 miles north of Pittsburgh.
I have been there.
Yeah.
My uncle actually lived there for a while. He was a recruiter in the Army.
Oh, I see. Okay.
There's, you know, Vandegrift, Leechburg, Apollo, New Kensington, which is where your cousin lives.
Right.
That area. There are three bands from this area that were in the finals. And are you familiar with 105.9 The X?
Yeah, sure, of course.
Yeah. And Abby, who's on there, she's the lead singer for Fist Fight in the Parking Lot.
Okay.
I met her that night, but didn't know it.
one of those, yeah, okay.
she's now, you know, she's the morning the morning person on the X. And anyway, just a random story that came up from the 31st Street Pub.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear they closed. So where can we play these days?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I know. We've been struggling with that for some time. We very much like to play live. And they don't make it easy, man. And I don't understand why they have to make it so difficult, but they won't guarantee you any money. They have you running around selling tickets, you know.
I was going to bring that up.
Come on, man. You know, throw us a bone. I mean, we work our asses off. We're you know, countless hours of rehearsals, not to mention what it takes to write and record an original release. And you can't throw us, you know, enough money to put gas in the car and eat. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. But I find the situation to be nationwide, if not on an international scale. And it's just so frustrating. I mean, what are we supposed to do? Musicians got to eat, and we got to survive, and we work as hard as anybody else. So why they think it's for free, I'm not quite sure who started that, but it's really screwing us, man.
I saw a meme on Facebook one time, and it said, musicians, the only people in the world that will spend thousands of dollars on equipment, throw it in a $500 car, drive 300 miles to make $3.
That's right. I've seen that. I've seen that post as well, and sadly, it's kind of true. I mean, just, you know, you hit it on the head. Just what you got on stage and gear. Mm-hmm. You know, it's thousands of dollars. And these clubs, they won't guarantee you anything. I mean, you play for the door, and whoever shows up, and half the time that's crooked because the guy taking money at the door lies about how many people came in. So I've played subsonic gigs, not in Pittsburgh, and I won't say where we, you know, you're playing the show, and of course, okay, maybe your set's only a half hour, 45 minutes, but you're spending the night there because you got to be there and be ready to go. At the end of the night, the guy had the balls to hand me a $10 bill.
Wow.
For the whole band. So, you know, when those are the conditions you're expected to perform under, it's pretty tough, man. And being a band leader, it's even more so for me because
you have to go back and go listen.
Well,
to
I got
to
go. I got to apologize to my band every night. You know, it gets old. I mean, these guys are busting their asses, rehearsing, and doing it out of love. But my God, you know, you can't hand somebody $3 at the end of a night. It's just, it's so humiliating. So, and as I said, that's not just a regional condition. I'm in touch with several agencies, and they're all telling me the same. They said, "Hey, Ron, we'll book you anywhere in the country you want to play. No problem." They know, people know Frost. They, you know, they're cool with it, but nobody will guarantee us any money. And I said, "Well, I'm not going to drag a band all over the United States and come home, you know, eating crackers and rolling change." So I'm not quite sure how to get around that, but that's what's going on.
That's I've not recently, but I have spoken to Cordell Crockett from Ugly Kid Joe a few times.
Okay.
And Ugly Kid Joe actually refuses to play in the United States now for pretty similar reasons.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, it's not even a refusal. It's just like, how is this supposed to work? I mean, do people, you know, do club owners and bartenders and wait, do they work for free? Why should musicians work for free? I don't know who started this and what they think we're supposed to live on, but, and it's not that you're even looking to go out and tour and come home with, you know, all this money, but you just don't want to lose your ass. I think that's pretty much common sense. And, I don't know. I guess everybody's giving it away, so why should they pay for it?
I think that's I'm a big internet and computer person. Mm-hmm. It's what I do. I teach computers. Obviously, my podcast is on the internet. But I think that as much as the internet has helped unsigned musicians, it's also hurt. And
oh, it's hurt. It
plays right into this situation.
That's hurt people drastically. I mean, of course it has, it's good in that it makes information more accessible. But now, you know, and artists are partly to blame too because they give everything away. They give away their original releases. They give this away. How are you supposed to make any money? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you used to tour to support record sales. Well, there kind of aren't any now. I mean, yeah, of course you can download things for, you know, 99 cents a song. Okay, that's cool. But you can't get paid to tour. You can't get paid for anything. How are you supposed to sustain yourself? I mean, I do it by living pretty simply, and I play in a couple other bands to make money. But, yeah, nobody seems to have an answer for how to get around this. And I guess as long as people are willing to give things away, we're not going to get around this. So it's a shame.
That makes me think of Lars. And the whole Napster thing. And at the time, I was like, I can't believe he's fighting this. But from Metallica.
Oh, right. Yeah, I heard about that.
I have mixed feelings. because I said, the internet is what I do. But sure. At the same time, I can see how it's affecting not even just music, just the world as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a downside to everything. There's an upside and a downside. And, okay, that's just the way things work. But it's not just depriving artists of a career. It's also depriving a lot of people of some music and or whatever other kind of art they want to experience because you can't climb out of the sea of the internet, you know. There's just so much overload of information that how is any one artist, unless you have a lot of money and can hire a really good publicist, which, you know, we're talking six figures to do something like that, there's no way to rise out of the sea of information. So there's just too damn much of it. And how do you matter in all that?
So this next question is kind of odd to ask at this point because we're talking about how there aren't many venues and, you know, it's hard to play out, but if you had to pick a favorite venue that you've played in, which one would it be and why?
Odeon Hammersmith, London. Such a storied place, such a storied venue. A lot of artists that I admired played there, and I remember seeing them and, you know, in magazines on stage in London, and I thought, wow, you know, someday wouldn't that be the ultimate? And we got to play there with Frost on a Halloween night, believe it or not, and sold it out. And it's an old theater, and it's just two balconies, and there were just kids hanging off of the balcony. It was just a great night. It just it was a snapshot in time for me to go, wow, I'm on the stage, man. This is where all my heroes played, you know. So that was probably, if I had to pick one, you know, here again, it's hard to pick them, but that and probably Beacon Theater in New York.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, play some of the best unsigned music that Pennsylvania has to offer. I have some subsonic music that I can play for them, and we will be right back with Ron Marks. And we're back with Ron Marks on the Pennsylvania Rock Show. If you're just tuning in, we were talking earlier about his book and Celtic Frost and some of his influences, his favorite venues he's played in. And when we're off the air, he mentioned that he has some projects that he has in the works that he wanted to talk about. So we're going to go in that direction now. So what do you have coming up, Ron?
Well, in addition to the book, I'm signed to the DSN, Digital Syndicate Network. That's DSN.com or DSNmusic.com. And they've released a three-album box set of the first three Subsonic records, which is called Trifecta. And also have released an acoustic album I did called Honeycomb. So those are available. And took a shot recently, and I have quite a bit of satirical material. As I said, I'm a big Zappa fan. And dug out some archives and played them for some people. They're like, you know, this is really cool. Nobody does this anymore. You ought to release it. I'm like, oh, who's going to release this thing? It's so obscure. Anyway, I send these demos to DSN, and they're very interested in releasing it. So we're in the process of making that happen, getting mastering done, what have you. So I'm hoping to have that out in the next few months. And as I said, we have the book we're looking for a publisher for. It's called Blood Groove. And I have an idea to host or executive produce a TV series. Now, don't have any titles for it yet, but it's basically you see a lot of travel shows, such as Anthony Bourdain. He goes around the world and does the food thing and the culture thing.
I have watched
that. My idea is to apply that to music and pretty much travel the world and profile everything from a jug band to a rock band to a symphony orchestra or, you know, natives beating drums on a savanna. But just any and all forms of music cultures, and to even possibly sit in with some of these groups. And so we're trying to pitch that to some networks. And I'm always looking to produce other bands' original releases. That's been quite an ambition for some time. And, you know, of course, we always want to get Subsonic on the road, get a tour going there. And I'm in the process in the next probably few weeks. I'll be shooting a promotional video in and around Pittsburgh, actually, oddly enough. And we're going to put together a comprehensive quick pitch of all these projects to send to various industry companies and see if we can't get some of these things put on.
I really like the idea of traveling the world and showing the different types of music.
Yeah, thanks. I thought it was a good idea, too. Like I said, I'm a fan of these. Of course, I love world travel, so I'm a fan of any kind of shows that are about that. And I'm like, wow, man, you know, let's really take this far. We could be sitting on a porch in the bayou, or we could be sitting in, you know, Vienna with a symphony, or we could be sitting in a blues club in Chicago. You know, I mean, every culture has a music background. You know, there's not a country in the world that. Yeah,
and it was in Chicago.
Oh, is that right?
It was Buddy Guy's.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've been there.
That was an awesome experience. I want to go back.
So if somebody, you know, if some network would bite on that, I mean, there's just endless possibilities with a series like that.
Oh, and, there, you know, there's so many different styles of music and so many different, you know, you could go on forever.
I think so. Yeah. I couldn't see how you could ever cover it all. There's just to, you know, I mean, just Asia and Africa alone, you probably would take you a decade to even scratch a surface of something like that. And I don't know, I hope I would be a good choice to host it, since I do have some international credentials and I'm not just some guy, you know, like, who's this guy and what's he know about music? Well, I mean, I must know a little bit about it to be doing it this long, so it kind of makes sense to me, and I don't know that that show's on TV right now, so let's hope.
If you had to pick one person that supported you the most as a musician throughout your career, who would that be?
Oh, my parents, my mom and dad, for sure. They, you know, realized at a very early age that I had definitely had a talent for it and loved it. And I mean, you know, you couldn't not recognize it. I mean, even as a kid, they had to pull me out of the basement to eat, you know, to quit practicing my instruments. And then I think I really cracked it open when I went to Europe, because, you know, here I am 22 years old and, you know, who gets to do that? So they went, you know, okay, this kid's obviously pretty serious about this and he's actually making this happen. So how can you not support the guy? And, you know, without them, there wouldn't be a career, because I spent many, many years recording and writing and honing those skills. And if I had to get up and, you know, go to work every day, there wouldn't have been that time to do that. And without their support, that's pretty much what I would have had to do. So, I mean, there have been so many people that have been supportive. I can't even remember them all, but without doubt, my parents are number one.
When you made the switch from drums to guitar, was there a conversation had there, or you just did it?
No, I did both, actually. You know, I didn't really quit drums. I started picking up a guitar. My family owns a music store, Mark's Music, here in Hermitage. And, you know, I pretty much grew up at the music store and would spend some Saturdays there and just hang out. And, you know, it was that damn Kiss record. When I, you know, I had to find out what a Marshall amp was and a Gibson Les Paul, and suddenly this was all very interesting to me. So
which record
the store.
Was it? I don't know if we covered that.
What's that?
Which Kiss album was it? Was
Alive. Alive.
Oh, okay.
Was the first one. Yeah, it was just the end. You know, I see these amps in the back, but I don't know what a Marshall is. Nobody around here played a Marshall amp. And, so at the music store, I just start taking guitars off the wall and start playing with them. And my Uncle Carl saw that I was quite interested. He goes, you know, take one home. It's okay. You can play it for a while and see if you like it. And of course I did. And, again, my father, Ron Sr., said, you know, you're obviously good at this. Why don't we take some lessons so you know what you're doing rather than just fiddling around? So for quite a few years, Saturday mornings, you know, drum lesson was at 11 and guitar was at 11:30. So I was doing them simultaneously for quite some time. But eventually, because of the writing, you know, guitar took over. I still play drums on a lot of the Subsonic stuff. I mean, it's not like I don't do it. I just don't really play them in a band anymore.
Do you remember what your first kit was?
Oh, my. No, some Oyster Pearl imported something. I was 4 years old when I got my first kit. So I was lucky. I'm lucky if I can remember the color of it. You know, I probably had no idea what brand it was or anything. But eventually I went into Slingerlands and stuff like that. And I have a set of Pearls.
Do you have a favorite guitar that you play?
Yeah, I have to admit I have a 79 Les Paul Custom that I've had since I was 16 or 17, and it's been all over the world with me. Played hundreds and hundreds of gigs and recorded I don't know how many songs. Again, very hard to pick one, but if somebody came up to me and said, you got to give them all away but one, that's the one I keep.
Have you ever been sponsored by a company?
Yeah, I've had an endorsement with Dean Guitars for quite some time.
This one is going in so many different directions, and I don't know where to go now.
Okay, sorry about that, but I kind
of... No,
yeah,
no,
I know.
He had a Grammy Award nomination?
Well, I don't know if that's quite fair. It was a preliminary nomination. I don't know that it ever actually got on the final ballot, but hey, I'll take whatever you can get. I mean, that was pretty cool.
Do you have any shows booked for Subsonic right now?
Nope. Sure would like to, and we've been talking about doing something in Pittsburgh. I'd love to do something at Alter Bar or, you know, something like that, or the Hard Rock, what have you. But and it's not like anybody tells us no. I mean, they're fine with it. But again, you know, I'm not 16 years old. I'm not running around the neighborhood selling tickets. I'm just, you know, I'm past that. And that seems to be the conditions that they're presenting with us. But, hey, we are definitely open for suggestions. If anybody has, you know, some cool shows coming up and then they want someone to play with, we're glad to do it. But and then we're not asking that, you know, we walk out of there with, you know, a lot of money, but just to be treated fairly, like anybody would want to, and we'll be there. You know, it's no problem.
You mentioned earlier that you'd like to produce some local music. How would someone get a hold of you for that?
Through Facebook, or my website is ronmarksmusic.com, and there you can see things I've done, and there's videos posted and some songs posted, and there's contact information there. So it's not hard to find me. You know, local, national, international. I mean, I'm up for anything. So, again, if it's around the Pittsburgh area, that makes it even easier, because then we don't have to live somewhere else and fly somewhere else and do all that. Always open for suggestions.
Oh, I don't know if you can hear that, but I went to your website.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, it does come up, doesn't it?
So if you're going to Ron's website, be prepared. It plays music right away.
We're not waiting. We want to hit them hard.
Do you get to go out and see other band shows?
When I can. For instance, you know, we were messaging back and forth. I played 4 out of the last 5 nights. So it's not always that way, but I try and keep as busy as possible. But when I can, sure. Absolutely. I love to go hear other bands.
What bands were you playing in those 4 nights?
Oh, geez. There's several. There's a trio called Candy Apple Black that does kind of 70s and 80s kind of stuff. And then I play in a 60s tribute band called Pipe Dreams, which does a lot of cool Stones and Beatles and Doors. And that's been new for me. I've never played that kind of music before. And that's kind of came up out of the blue, and it's quite a good band and quite professional. And so I said, what the hell? I'll go back to school and learn how to do this. So that's been about the past year and a half I've been doing that.
If a new guitarist or drummer was looking for advice, what advice would you give them?
Well, are we talking artistic or business advice?
Both.
Okay. Boy, that's a tough one to do fast. Artistically, I see a lot of guys getting too tangled up in mechanics and the technical aspect of what they do, and not being enough emotionally creative. You know, they can play 900 notes at 900 miles an hour, but there's not a thought in any of that, and there's no emotion to it. But, you know, when my dad, who is a great improvisationist, always told me, you know, when you play, you have to speak and there has to be a message. It's not just, we're not painting by numbers here, and it's not, you know, 1 through 10. And I just see a lot of cats. I mean, their technique is amazing. I mean, they can play things I could never play, but there's no message. And if there's no message, then who cares?
Then what's the point?
Yeah. And drummers too. I mean, I know drummers that can do the double kick solo to blow your mind, but they can't play 8th notes in time and groove and play a song. And for me, it's all about songs. You know, that's memorable. And the song will tell you what it wants. You know, you shouldn't just play anything to showcase your talent. What's the song? What parts best fit the song? What sounds best fit the song? You know, sometimes you should play nothing. You know, that's an option. But I don't know that guys are learning that and that are aware of that. So that would be my advice artistically. From a business standpoint, good luck. I wish I had some advice, because if I did, we would be doing some international touring and that. It's really tough out there. The only people I know that are doing anything that aren't, you know, signed to a major label are people that are booking it themselves. They're just taking charge and, doing what they can. I'm not quite sure what there is to do, but just do your own thing. You know, even with me, if I waited for other people to record records, I'd never done it. I mean, I quit counting at 550 some songs. The way that happened was I bought a recorder, a multi-track recorder, when I was 18, and I haven't turned back yet. So be independent.
Are you still using the same one?
No. God, I've been through four or five, you know. I mean, I started with a four-track, went to an eight-track, went to a 16, went to a 24, you know, just over the years. But the point was, I just took charge and I said, I'm doing this. And I'm not just goofing around. I am going to make finished albums. Now, I'm not saying they're of the same recording qualities as a major release, but my point being, had I waited for other people to show up, none of it would have happened. So be independent. You know, take charge. Just make it happen. Don't wait for other people. And don't use excuses. Well, this guy didn't show up or this guy didn't. Hey, screw it, man. Do it yourself. Learn how to do it. Make it a priority. And it can be done.
Now, see, there's one of those things that I see, again, as a plus and a minus at the same time. The increase in technology, you know, now anyone can record themselves. And sometimes it comes out pretty good, and other times it's like, man, I wish they wouldn't have figured out how to do this.
I understand what you're saying, but, you know, that's all part of it. Like we said, there's an upside and a downside to everything. What I have a hard time wrapping my head around is people that are making original releases, and they're just getting all of the music off the internet. Nobody's playing anything. It's like, well, okay, yeah, I guess it's original. I guess it's yours, technically. But it's not very human. It's not very organic. And, you know, just to pull a bunch of samples off the internet and say, here's my release. Oh, okay, well, I guess if you can click a mouse, you can put out a record. You know, I always hoped it was a little more personal than that, but to each his own.
Let's talk genres for a little while. You know,
okay.
You said you specifically went the hard rock route, but you also started out as, you know, jazz or in big band.
Right.
Is there a genre that you would never play?
I could probably, I don't know. I could probably do without hip hop.
See, this current hip hop, I would agree with you, but like, back when I was growing up, you know, stuff like LL Cool J and Run DMC, and I don't mind that.
Oh, no, I don't mind it. I'm just saying, well, there's really not a lot of room for guitar in that stuff anyway, so I guess it doesn't really matter. But
well, you know, Run DMC did stuff with Aerosmith.
Yeah, that's true. That's, well, they did one. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of country. I had to play country when I was 18, 19. I was in two or three country bands then, and I got turned off by it. I was always the rock guy in the country band, and people were not shy about letting me know that that was not a good thing to them. So that was kind of a bad taste in your mouth, and I can't do the lyrics and the dogma of country music. It's just so manipulative and, you know, all the right things at the right time and mama and the flag and all that is just not my bit. And it's not really even country anymore. Now it's pop.
It's pop.
I mean, I could dig some Johnny Cash and some Hank Williams Sr. and some real country. I think that stuff's fantastic. And by the way, I've heard some of the greatest lead guitarists in my life playing country bands. But now it's just product, you know. It just comes out of a chute and it's prepackaged and
Did you ever hear any of the stuff that came out from Van Zandt?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, it was good.
And you know, and that's two rock guys that came together, and you know, and legendary rock guys that came together and played country. And
hey,
it's like any other genre.
You know, when it's done right, it's great. But when it's just fake and it's just, you know, it's just Walmart, then I lose interest. and you can, it doesn't matter if it's country or rock or whatever. When it's contrived and it's plastic, then it's not for me.
I saw an article earlier today on, I think it was Blabbermouth, which I actually have pulled up an article about you on Blabbermouth right now, but I think it was Blabbermouth, and it was one of the members of Rage Against the Machine apologizing for inspiring Limp Bizkit.
Oh, jeez. That's pretty funny.
He was like, I want to apologize for inspiring that, and I'm not going to use the words that he said.
Right. Well, you know, you never know who you're reaching. Sometimes it works, and sometimes you regret it, I guess.
Have you, let's see, playing with Celtic Frost, were there any big-name bands that you guys played with?
Yeah, we played with Anthrax, Exodus, Creator. I'm trying to go down the list. It's been a long time. But yeah, sure. We play with some cool bands. And it was really neat because, you know, at that point, I mean, Anthrax was doing well, obviously, and Metallica just started popping. Megadeth, I think, a little later. But nobody had quite popped yet. So everybody was, you know, it was a very exciting time because it was when metal was really hot. And I don't know that it had ever happened to that scale before. You know, metal was always kind of this, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Frost was a mainstream popular band. It was always a bit of an underground band. But even at that, it was still getting a lot of attention. And there were a lot of bands getting a lot of attention. So it was very good timing to be in a metal band.
A lot of people say that, you know, when grunge came out and Nirvana and you know, that genre and group of bands that it killed rock. Do you agree with that statement?
Well, it certainly made its mark, and you never kill rock. It always comes back. It goes away for some time, and you know that goes back to the '60s. I mean, you know, you think of Black Sabbath and early Led Zeppelin and all that, and okay, then something else comes along in the '80s. But rock and roll seems to, you know, it always makes a comeback and it's always strong. So, sure, grunge did its thing. But then it burned out pretty quickly too.
Yes, it did.
Certainly didn't last as long as rock and roll. And I like it. That's not a criticism. I like grunge. I love Nirvana. I think there was a brilliant band. Yeah. Rock takes its lumps and then it seems to come back.
It's Nirvana and STP and
sure.
You know, I was into that stuff, but I was still also into Kiss and Aerosmith and
Oh yeah, it was honest stuff. Those guys were good players. They were good writers. They weren't trying to deceive anybody. And no, I liked the way a lot of it sounded. No problem. You know, and I didn't really. I don't know, like other people, they love to turn it into a competition. I never felt that way about it. I never resented grunge as killing rock. It's not a competition. They're art forms. It's not a football game. And no problem. You know, as long as it's honest music and it's well done, you know, bring it on, man. It's fine.
See, usually I ask the question, if you could play on it, at a big venue with any band, what venue and what band, but, you know, you were just talking about Anthrax and,
right.
You know, you've kind of done that, I think.
I mean, not as much as some other people have done it, but I definitely got to taste that world a bit, and it was great, man. You know, some of the most memorable times as an artist of my life was with Frost. I mean, and not just from a standpoint of, you know, being in magazines or that. I mean, we went through hell together, and considering how young we were, which was, you know, 23 or something like that at the time, we had to go through some really adult things, and I mean for months and months and months, every day and every day. And the fact that guys at that age, you know, held it together and didn't quit and didn't break up, you know, that's a story. I don't know how many people have read Tom Fisher's books, but, you know, he goes into that in depth. And so, you know, it's more than an artistic victory. It was a personal victory for some young guys who showed some really fine maturity. So, you know, we're proud of that. And nobody can ever know, you know, what it was except the four of us. But it was really cool. I wouldn't have traded it for the world. And got to do some things I've never been able to do, you know, just the traveling alone. We were guests of royalty in Bavaria. We were going to Munich to, to meet with a lawyer over some legal battles with the label. And on the way there, the guy that was helping us out, we pulled into this Bavarian village and we pulled up to a castle and we're like, what are we doing here? And he said, well, he's this, you know, this guy's the royalty, the prince, whatever, in this village. And he's a friend of mine because this guy was an art dealer. So he had a lot of pretty, pretty cool friends. And he said, this is where we're staying tonight. so you imagine, a, you know, a kid from Hermitage, PA is sitting in Bavaria in this castle. And that night we had a meeting with a rep from Adidas to do a, some, you know, some product endorsements there. And I mean, it was a whirlwind, you know, who gets to do that? And without, without Celtic Frost, I had never done that stuff, not to mention all the gigs and photo shoots and magazines. And it was great.
Was there anything that you would have, like, looking back on it, anything that you regret doing while you were touring? That you can tell us about?
No. We were pretty cool. Unlike some of the other bands, I mean, you know, I partied a little bit, but we weren't anything close to. I mean, some of the other bands were pretty crazy. What do I regret? I regret it didn't last longer. We had so much promise. We were fielding offers to do movie soundtracks, and you know, it was a pretty cool time. But the relations with our record label at the time were so bad that we just, they were never ever to, able to survive it so those things could materialize. The, at the time, the album Into the Pandemonium was just being released, and it was a real departure from the first couple albums, and the label just would not get behind it. They pulled our tour support. We had to find private tour support, or we would have never even done those tours. And that was the friend of the drummer Reed St. Mark, Christopher Bruckner, who was an art dealer in Zurich, kind of took us under his wing and cut a few checks for some tours. But the label would just not support us, and, you know, you can only last so long. I mean, it's nobody in the band's fault, for sure. We all wanted things to work out better and longer. But it just wouldn't end, and we took pretty extensive measures legally to try and either get out of the contract or see if we couldn't resolve it, and it sadly just didn't work out. So that's my regret, is that it didn't last longer, because man, we were just getting started as far as I was concerned.
How about an embarrassing moment? Is there anything that happened on stage that just, you know, to this day, you're like, man, I wish that wouldn't have happened.
Well, no. Stupid me walked out in front of the PA one night, and I almost got blown off the stage. I was pretty stupid. But that was about it. We had a great time, man. And, you know, we had a few equipment issues here and there, but what band doesn't go through that? That's no big deal. But that was a bit of a frustration. One cool story, when we played Odeon Hammersmith in London, it was the last night of the UK tour, and we were out with Big Mick Hughes, who did Metallica and Def Leppard and all that, and the crew and the band became friends, and that, so at the end of the night, on Halloween night, we're still playing, and they were tearing down our set. And so, you know, by the end of the song, I had, you know, Tom and I each had one Marshall cabinet, and same with Martin Ain had one little bass cabinet, and I think Reed St. Mark had a kick drum and a snare and a hi-hat. And, you know, we're playing to a couple thousand people, and it was just hilarious. You know, they're sweeping the stage and pretending we're not there. So, you know, not embarrassing, more affectionate than anything. But no, we had a great time on tour.
I asked that question one time, and I can't remember who it was that answered it, but they told me they were playing at a dog park.
Ooh.
And a dog walked up and peed on his amp.
Oh, that's bad. No, we never had to deal with anything like that, thankfully. We had nice tour buses and great road crews, and no, we were very fortunate that way. But I do know that a lot of guys are going out in a van, and things are tough, and hey, I've done it too. I've been in a van before, and it is tough, but no, fortunately, we didn't have any dogs on stage.
Another person told me they were playing a show, and there was a Port-a-John on the stage.
Oh, my.
Like, crowd was using the Port-a-John on the
stage.
Oh,
that's nice. Yeah, they just, you know, the promoters and the people that put on these shows, it's like, what are you thinking, man? You know, this is humiliating. Can't we have a little dignity up here? But, yeah, they're not too worried about it.
Is there anything we haven't touched on that you'd like to tell us about?
I think we've done great. I think it was really casual and conversational, and you did a great job.
Thank you.
A lot of interviews, Bill, and some of them are just, they're just okay. You know, I can just see the piece of paper you're reading everything off of. And, you know, you get asked the same questions like 100 times. So, no, this was great. No, this was great. I really appreciate you doing it like this because it was just like two dudes sitting down talking. I was just curious, is there any way for you to know how large your audience is? Any way to track that?
In the past, when I did the show live, I actually, the bands used to play in my living room when it started.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
And live stream. People were logging into the server, and I could see how many people were logged in.
I see.
Currently, I can tell you how many people have visited the page that your podcast is on, but that's really all the further I can go. But
okay,
I can tell you that last year I had about 1,200,000 hits on my website.
Oh, nice. Well, that's impressive.
It's a click. You know, it's local music in southwestern Pennsylvania. So to hit that million mark, I was pretty excited.
I guess so. Wow, that's cool.
So it'll get heard. I just don't know by how many.
Oh, no, that's fine. I was just curious. I do this stuff, but I never really knew how that worked or if there was any way to track it or anything. I was just curious.
Yeah, it depends on, like, Mega Rock Radio.
Mm-hmm.
He could tell when he's running the show on Sunday. He'd be able to tell you exactly how many people are tuned in. But I don't have that ability.
Right.
I used to. So it was great having you on.
Oh, thank you. It was great doing it. I'm glad to do it anytime. If there's ever anything else, you know, you want to do or any kind of cool shows, if you think we might be a good fit for something that you hear about, let me know and we'll see if we can make something.
I can definitely do that. So if you're just tuning in, we've been talking to Ron Marks from Subsonic. You can check him out at ronmarksmusic.com. And on Reverb Nation, you can Google Celtic Frost, and he comes up all over the place, including Blabbermouth, which is one of my favorite metal sites. You're on iTunes, correct?
Yes.
And
if you really need to find the music, you go to dsnmusic.com.
There you go, dsnmusic.com.
Yeah,
and
all the materials there for purchase, you know, for download. And, yeah, so there's a lot of ways to find me if you need to. Yeah, so whatever you want to play. I mean, and it's kind of cool because that's a compilation of the first four albums. So, you know, even at the last song, I think it's Turn Signal, and that's going to be on the Satire record. So there's a sample from pretty much everything on that CD.
Okay, anything?
And whatever, you know, whatever you like, I don't care. Pardon?
Is there anything in particular, or
I like them all, you know, or I probably wouldn't have put them on. I'm even trying to think what the order is of that. I like Burn It Down. I like A Day Late. And the rest is up to you.
I'm
grateful that you're playing it. So whatever you think.
All right. Thank you very much.
Oh, no. Hey, you know, it's so funny these artists who go, I don't like that song, and I don't like, well, why'd you put it on the record?
Right.
You know, if I don't like it, it doesn't make it on.
So cool.
Okay. So we're going to say at least burn it down. And I already forgot the other one you told me.
A Day Late.
A Day Late. That's it. Definitely playing those two.